Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. In the name of the Executive Board of Appiano SE, I'm happy to welcome you to our phone conference this morning to give you a more detailed update on the Q3 developments at Appiano SE, as well as the year-to-date situation. Of course, very detailed going forward on our assumption for the rest of the year. Management generally is very unsatisfied with the results and the development of the business in Q3 in some of our markets and some of our ramp-ups, which led us to review our forecast for the end of the fiscal year and to apply all potential risks and confirm a more conservative forecast for this fiscal year. We will talk about the updated guidance in a couple of minutes within the course of the call. Let me first point out the results of Q3, starting with our net sales of the consolidated group, which brought us in Q3 to an increase of 17% to 96.3 million euros. Year-to-date, that sums up to an increase of 15%, up to 271.4 million euros turnover. On the very important like-for-like sales, we had to announce a decrease of 1.9% in Q3, which is, as already pre-discussed in our last call for the half-year 2018 figures, primarily driven by our market in transition in Sweden, but also driven by a weak footfall, which we already discussed in the call in September in the core European markets in July and August. If we would adjust our Q3 like-for-like sales by the Swedish market in transition, we would have delivered a minor decrease of 0.6% like-for-like. That brings us on a full-year base to a like-for-like year-to-date that is slightly below zero by -0.3%. Again, adjusted for our market in transition, we would have delivered an increase almost close to 1% by 0.9 percentage points. Given the fact that our like-for-like developed in Q3 beyond our expectations, and given the fact that especially two new markets opened end of December last year did not develop in the ramp-up as we expected, we had to deliver an adjusted EBITDA Q3 decrease of 18.1%, meaning we delivered 8.6 million euros adjusted EBITDA. Of course, that is followed, especially on a like-for-like base, by a margin decrease from 12.8% to 8.9%. Lutz will go in detail on the segment base to give you a better picture how that looks like on the different segments of Appiano, especially on a like-for-like base. The adjusted EBITDA year-to-date, followed by the Q3 results, where we had in the last year a very strong Q3, decreased by 14.4% to 22.6 million euros compared to last year's same period. That's a decrease, of course, impacted by the Q3 results heavily from 11.2% to 8.3%. Our opening pipeline for this year 2018 is fully in line. We have opened so far end of September 18 restaurants, 24 year-to-date. We will talk about this in a minute on the next page. We will deliver 32-34 openings by end of the year 2018. In the meantime, the rollout of the takeaway and home deliveries is fully in track or on track with the new openings and wherever we could do this from an architectural standpoint in the existing restaurants. That brings us to an actual number of takeaway and home delivery services of 120 restaurants. As I just said, due to the development on the like-for-like base in a couple of our markets weak in Q3, we had to make adjustments in the EBITDA expectation and in the like-for-like expectation. In addition to this, we have seen lower ramp-ups of a few newly opened restaurants, and I will talk about this more in detail in a couple of minutes. Let me come briefly to the opening pipeline. You see that we are in the full, let's say, track or on the full track in our opening pipeline. Until end of the year, we see now 33 restaurants getting in place. You see still the openings that are coming from Doha to Paris. And number 34, which is not 100% sure yet, should be an opening in Vienna. At the same time, we had three closures the same period. Two of them were in Poland, in Warsaw, and in Lodz due to the change of a, let's say, very family-driven franchise partner to a very, let's say, professional and experienced franchise partner to the Rossinter Group. One was an end of a lease in Warsaw, and Lodz was a location in a shopping center where Rossinter and we together did not experience for a medium and long track, did foresee profitable development of those locations. And last but not least, we had to close one franchise location in Riyadh, which was a lease end of a mall that couldn't be renewed. On the other hand, as you have seen probably on the opening pipeline, we developed with a new partner in UAE already two restaurants in this year. Two are still in the pipeline, and there's another one supposed to come up early next year. On the takeaway and home delivery, I think I don't have to elaborate too much because you're very familiar with our development here. Just to confirm that we are on track in opening the takeaway and home deliveries in our new restaurants, and still also with a nice development on an also like-for-like base from the takeaway and home delivery business. Before I hand over for the detailed figures in a minute, on page five, let me just sum up the turnover development in Q3. As I just mentioned in my intro, we grew by 17% in the group. Thereof, the biggest growth has delivered in the segment of rest of Europe, by primarily driven by the new openings and also the big segment of new openings in the last year to 17. And Germany could contribute by 5% growth on a relatively strong base of restaurants. On a like-for-like growth, and I think this is the very important slide here to understand why we have been more cautious in our prognosis for this year, we have grown in Q3 negatively by minus 1.9% versus a base of plus 4.8% in the previous year. If you would adapt or would adjust this to the discussed Swedish situation, where we're going to talk about more in detail in the course of the call, we would have seen a decrease of 0.6%. The German market, competing with a 4.6 like-for-like increase in previous year, delivered a minus 0.1%, so more or less stable in Q3, even with the July and August situation. Rest of Europe has shown the biggest decrease by 3.8% like-for-like. Again, adjusted by Sweden, it would have been minus 1.1% versus a comparison of last year of plus 5.3%. A little bit below versus previous year, based on 3.4%, were the United States, which were the rest of Europe, with minus 0.7%. That was primarily driven by the smaller Shanghai restaurant, which we made a refurbishment, but also a little bit on the New York store, which is in a full scaffolding due to the fact that there are refurbishments on the house that impacted slightly the traffic of the restaurant. That brings me in on a full year-to-date base view of our turnover to a 0.3% negative deviation in like-for-like. Without Sweden, as I just said, we would have shown a growth of 0.9%, versus a base of 5.7%. Germany, competing with 5.3% like-for-like versus previous year, shows year-to-date a positive like-for-like of 1.2%. The market we have to watch very closely in terms of our turnover development, rest of Europe, has shown a deviation of minus 1.9 versus a very strong 6.3 in the previous year, without Sweden, 0.8%. And I think, as you know, rest of Europe is minor due to the restaurants we have there in US and Australia, so the base is not that big. But rest of world has grown by 0.3% versus a comparison of 5.8%. Total group, as I just said, 15%. And by saying that, I would like to hand over to our CFO, Lutz Schake, who will give you a more transparency on the EBITDA performance of our restaurants.
Yeah, good morning, everybody, also from my side. If you turn to page 7 of the presentation, you see the key financials for the Q3. Like last quarters, we continue to grow the company with around double-digit number on sales. We can report a growth of 17% to 96 million. This is below our sales expectation we had for the quarter, as stated before by Jochen, only not due to like-for-like, but also to the ramp-ups of our new stores. And therefore, we were not able to report an increase in EBITDA. We had to report a decrease from 10.5 to 8.6 million euros, which is below our expectations. As stated in the Q2 call, our expectation was more to have a flat development for that quarter, but we could not achieve that. This is caused also by a decrease in the restaurant contribution, which you can see from 30.1 to 11.6 million. Part of that decrease is linked, of course, to our core marketing position Sweden, but also to some of the like-for-like, so opening restaurants who are not contributing positively yet to the EBITDA. If you compare that to the year-to-date picture, you can see that we continue to grow on page 8, the turnover for the group by 15%, but we are not able to convert that into an EBITDA development. The restaurant contribution shows a flat development more or less from 34.9 to 33.3, but the reduction in adjusted EBITDA is even stronger. The main reason for that is also that we have increased overhead and headquarter costs in line with the planned growth, and we were not able to meet our target of 5% in regards to overhead and headquarter costs of sales, and I will come back to that a little bit more later. If you look to the segment reporting in detail on the restaurant and franchise level on page 9, you see that we have to acknowledge that in Q3 we had to report lower margins for the segment Germany as well as Europe. On restaurant level, we reduced our margin from 15.2% in Germany to 12.6% on the restaurant level, and on the group level even in addition to 14.1% from 16.4%. In rest of Europe, mainly, of course, caused by our JV in Sweden, which was very profitable a year before, we had even a stronger reduction from 19.6% to 14.9%. Both are not satisfied development for the management, and, of course, we are working constantly on that to improve the situation. The increase in the EBITDA in rest of world is mainly caused by the acquisition in Australia, where we had an increase in the EBITDA from 0.1 to 0.3, and for the group, of course, also from 0.6, including franchise, to 1 million. So in summary, we had a negative trend continuing in Europe, a slight negative one in Germany, due to the fact, as mentioned before, we were not able to meet the expectation which we had for the quarter. If you turn over to next page 10, you see the year-to-date development. Here you see that in Germany we are still on a small margin decrease, but we are on the EBITDA level comparable to last year. You should consider that we have done a more conservative balance sheet policy. I will come to that a little bit later. On Europe, we are declining in margin as the quarter before. Like-for-like margin dropped from 17.2 to 15.8. And overall margin, including the startups, which we have, to 14% from 18.7. and therefore we are not able to report a growth in EBITDA for that segment. Rest of world, again, as mentioned before, mainly influenced by the Australian acquisition. If you turn over to the adjusted EBITDA calculation on page number 11, you see that our percentage of overhead costs on number 2 in regards to sales increased from 5.3 to 5.7%. So we have a 3 million higher overhead cost adjusted for one-time impact. This, of course, was not fully covered up by increase in restaurant contribution. At the same time, we also increased our IFRS accruals by an additional 1 million, which we report here also as a one-time impact. We have been in discussion with auditors to be more conservative on certain accrual items, and therefore we have reported that number here. In regards to other cost items, pre-opening costs are now at 5.4 million and expected to further grow until year end in line with our opening pipeline. In regards to the financial situation, we have reported last quarter already that we have an increase in our net debt, which is continuing for the quarter three as well due to our CapEx program. Unfortunately, the cash flow situation on the operating cash flow was behind our expectation in line with EBITDA development. Therefore, we have seen an increase in net debt to 180 million. We were able to execute a capital increase in October, which is reported here already, which will reduce the net debt position of the group to 160 million on a comparable basis. Let me state that we have a very sufficient liquidity position for the company. We have a liquidity sufficient secured for 2018-19, so there are no worries on that side in line with our current plan, and that we are in discussions with our banks now regarding the financing situation as it states on the RCF facility. We have agreed with the banks a general waiver for Q3. We are in finalization of that process, and we hope to continue that discussion fruitful in the next days to finalize that in due course. Sorry for my flu. In regards to the page 13, I would hand over to Jochen, who will report about the like-for-like development in regards to ticket size and footfall.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thank you, Lutz. We already discussed the like-for-like development, as you can see here on the year-to-date base. What we see is that we still have a footfall decrease in the different segments, although the footfall decrease has been less intense in the German market versus half year, where we had a minus 2.1 footfall decrease. Now we are down by minus 1.7%. On the other hand, due to higher units per ticket and average selling price, we could increase the ticket size by 2.9%, which was in half year by 2.6%. Rest of Europe is shown still a stronger footfall decrease by minus 3.9%, as we just said, driven primarily by the markets in transition. On the ticket size, rest of Europe could increase the ticket size by 2.1%, also to more units per ticket and higher average selling price, up to 2.1 from 1.7 in the first half year. Rest of world is shown a decrease of minus 3.1% footfall. First half year was minus 3.8, so we see here a recovery as well. With a higher average ticket price of 3.5% compared to 4.1% in the first half year. That brings us to a slightly improve of the decrease of footfall versus the first half year by minus 2.7% in the group and a 2.5% slightly improved average ticket size versus 2.2 in the first half of this year. Having said that, due to the fact that we have seen a slow Q3, plus given the fact that we have seen, especially in driven by mainly 4 restaurants that opened in a new market, Denmark, end of the year, and the 2 Scottish restaurants, where we have seen lower ramp-ups in terms of turnover and EBITDA as assumed, we adapted our outlook for this year. Let me, on the other hand, give you a little bit of feeling for Q4. At this point, we see a recovery of our sales in Q4. So year to date, we see a positive like-for-like in the German market. We see no negative decrease in the rest of world, and we see a still negative in rest of Europe, but much better than we have seen in Q3 so far. But summing all the risks and opportunities up, we decided to guide you a conservative, including all risks, updated outlook. And that brings us for restaurant openings to a number of, in average, 33. So 33, maybe 34 openings until the end of the year. We said 32 because you know there's still some opportunities that maybe one opening doesn't take place in time due to construction or outside events. But for from today's perspective, almost end of November, we see that we will open 33 restaurants. In terms of group net sales, since the turnovers are under pressure, as discussed in our entry wordings, we see a decrease of our group net sales from 385 to 400 to 375 to 385, which is in the middle, a decrease of 10 million versus our expectation after the first half year. On a like-for-like sales growth, due to the fact that we're still under pressure in rest of Europe on the like-for-like base, we give a guidance of minus 0.5 up to 0.5. At the moment, we are in the middle of this guidance. And from an adjusted EBITDA perspective, we guide 34 to 38 million euros, as I just said, primarily based on the turnover development, the ramp up of those, especially for locations. And let's say, gives a little bit sort of an addition of the missing turnover. You know that we have an average flow through of 50% if we don't reach our turnover targets, and that explains a little bit the deviation between 10 million euro turnover and 5 million down to the lower range of the pre-guidance in terms of EBITDA. Management is very much focused on getting much better as soon as possible versus the actual situation, meaning we develop together with the international management team and within the executive board and focused action plan to increase our profitability short-term and, of course, mid-term. And let me just point out the four, let's say, top lines on focus points that management is focusing on. Number one, of course, is our Swedish turnaround plan, which is on track, and our COO, Cornelius Ewerke, would be happy to answer your questions in the Q&A on the status where we are here. In addition, we developed together an operational excellency program, which we want to implement throughout Europe, that will have to focus on several measurements to increase the gross profit, meaning a more transparent best practice management of our gross profits, in sort of a category management where we take over a lot of good experience and learnings from our COO that's now in charge since May of this year. It's not only focused, of course, on gross profit management, but also focused on identifying the right like-for-like drivers that are more customized to the different locations where we make our businesses, and that are much more customized to the deviations during the course of the week or in lunch or in different food segments than a generic marketing tool. So a very specialized sort of logic, including in addition a digital marketing toolbox to increase traffic to our restaurants. On top of that, from the learnings that we have with a couple of our openings that did not deliver as expected in terms of their ramp-up, we are working on a ramp-up enhancement program for new openings, the ones that are running, but also not to make mistakes in the ones that are coming going forward. Last but not least, we decided a significant CapEx reduction by 40%, a little bit more than 40% to be precise, for the next fiscal year. This is due to a shifted balance between franchise and own equity restaurants. Having said that, our own equity will go only in the markets where we have considerable contribution in the next year, which is France, Austria, and Germany. On the other hand, we will have a lot of franchise openings to keep our growth generally on track. If we had, or if we have seen in the last year, a balance of 75%-25% own equity versus franchise, we could manage to balance that to an approximate 50/50 percentage for the next year based on the actual situation that we see on our 2019 pipeline. Having said that, we want to confirm and we want to, you know, want to point out that management is very focused now on getting the negative developments we have seen on the turnover base on one hand, but also on a few EBITDA profitability issues that we have seen in new openings to work very consequently, very focused, to get here a better profitability going forward. From management side, we would like to close the information package firsthand, and we would be very happy to answer all your detailed questions with opening now the Q&A for all of you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question for our speakers, please dial zero one on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it is your turn to speak, you can dial zero two to cancel your question. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment please for the first question. The first question is from James Rowland-Clark of Barclays. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I've got three questions, please. The first is on your debt. Would you mind just, you know, discussing when you think you might have reached an agreement with the banks and roughly what you think your average cost of debt will be going forward? Secondly, on the lowering the guidance that you did last night, is there any reason why you didn't lower that back in September when you would have known roughly the lower footfall that you'd seen in August and July through Q3? Finally, the guidance still feels extremely wide, and it's 5 million for adjusted EBITDA from 42 million-47 million, which is quite a wide guidance therefore for Q4 or implied Q4. Is there anything that performance in Q4 is contingent on or you're particularly worried about, which has meant that you've left a 5 million range for guidance there? Thank you.
Maybe, Lutz, you would take over the first question.
James, first of all, thank you for your good questions, and we will answer them appropriately.
Good. First, question on the debt. We have received already the waiver letter, which we are discussing with the banks at the moment. We assume to close the topic in the next 14 days latest, in line with our covenants reporting. In regards to the cost of debt, short term, we don't expect any increase. Midterm, we expect that, due to the covenant situation we're in and the net debt to EBITDA ratio, we might see an increase of around 200 basis points, maybe an average.
Coming to your second question, James, when we talked about the guidance in September, we haven't had the P&L for August ready from our restaurants, and we were also assuming a better development in general rest of Europe in terms of turnover. Germany was at that time already positive with 1.7% in September, but rest of Europe did not deliver as we expected enough footfall. Based on the turnover, we had, of course, more pressure on our P&L than we expected. In addition to that, as we just said, we did a little bit more cautious accruing. I guess Lutz mentioned that in the course of the call. Last but not least, we were expecting a better ramp up of the new openings.
Yeah, and if we talk about briefly the new openings, we see a significant deviation in two, let's say, markets that we opened new, which, by the way, is not planned for the next years, 19 and 20. We opened new end of the year, as you remember, December, two new restaurants in Copenhagen, where we expected after the, let's say, normal ramp-up of 6-7 months that they really jump much better forward when we made the last forecast, but we don't see that they're coming as expected in terms of their turnover, in terms of their EBITDA. And then also the two restaurants in Scotland, yeah, where the brand is almost as unknown as it is in Denmark, since we're only in London, in Edinburgh and Glasgow, ramped up much slower than we assumed. So bringing together the, let's say, profitability impact of the less than expected turnovers in September with the new openings brought us to be really conservative now with the guidance. If you say it's a wide guidance right now, you can agree. Do we see risks that bring us now to 34 from today's perspective as we speak here today? No, but we wanted to bring in all risks that are possible, and we didn't want to bring in any, let's say, upside potentials that are, of course, also potentially coming before the end of the year. So we wanted to be really conservative, and that's why we really hate that we had to surprise negatively, and we don't want to, you know, we don't want to do this at least at all one more time. That's why we estimated conservatively the forecast for the end of the year.
I think I would like to add that we are more than 10 million below our internal sales expectation for the compared to the 5-6 forecast we did. So if you compound a 50% flow through, and you can see that it's above 5 million, which we are only coming from the sales side. In addition, I think, as Jochen mentioned, we will be more conservative on the cool side. And that there will be also some impacts, which we are still in discussion with the auditors.
Can I just ask a follow-up? You said that Q4 was seeing improving trends in rest of Europe, or less negative. Germany is also better. So does that point you at the moment towards the sort of midpoint of your range or upper end of your range?
I think so. I mean, if I get your question right, let me just answer first with the like-for-like development, actually. So we have seen positive like-for-like, as I just said, in German market in September. We also saw positive like-for-like in the German market in October. And also year-to-date, we have positive like-for-like in the German market, meaning year-to-date, end of yesterday. Rest of, and this is definitely a nice step up versus our Q3 or year-to-date situation. Rest of world is also not developing negatively year-to-date. We still are not positive on rest of Europe year-to-date, but the deviation is better than the deviation we had in Q3. So we see positive trends, and we see also positive like-for-likes in our core market. That, of course, is very helpful for the outlook or the EBITDA assumption for the rest of the year. So, meaning if you ask me now, is 34 the probability that we reach from today's perspective? As I just said, from today's perspective, we don't see that. We see that we will be better than 34 million, but we wanted to make sure that all potential risks, without assumptions that things are getting strongly better, are reflected in the updated outlook. Is that answering your question, James?
That does. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next question is from Mr. Stiergarten of Berenberg. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Couple of questions from me. On guidance for the fourth quarter, I hear your comments that it's conservative and that obviously fourth quarter is doing a little bit better, but I'm suspecting that it's doing a little bit better because you put price increases through some of the markets, most notably Germany, but I think various other markets. I think the German price increase actually went through in September, and it's not helped the like-for-likes there through the back half of the third quarter. So what gives you the confidence? I mean, we're looking at, to hit the bottom end, you've got to do the same EBITDA in the fourth quarter that you did last year. What confidence have you got, given that clearly, despite price increases, it remains tough? Some of the markets are underperforming what you had been expecting in terms of ramp-up. Sweden quite clearly has not improved much, but you claim the turnaround is on track. So what is really giving you the confidence that you can even hit the bottom end of this guidance range?
Uh-huh. Well, from an EBITDA perspective, I think Lutz will answer that in a minute. From a development of the turnovers, yes, there are, like in also with all competitors, there are certain in certain markets some price increases that help that help the average ticket. On the other hand, we do also see that, for instance, in the German market, the deviation in footfall that we had to report in half year and in Q3 is getting smaller than it was in the first 9 months of the year, that were impacted by several different reasons. And of course, turnover, if you don't increase, as you know, Stuart, if you don't increase at the same time in the same amount, your cost structure is going then with a 50% ratio into your EBITDA. And for the full picture of the company, as I just said, we're feeling comfortable with 34 to 38. And maybe Lutz, you would like to add on that as well. Yes.
So in regards to the overall market, I think Germany we expect to be more or less in line with prior year, maybe slightly better. Also, we had a different accrual policy. We will get some positive impact from holiday accruals, which we have not had last year. In regards to Europe, we will see some improvement in EBITDA, especially in the French market compared to prior year, of course, due to sales growth as well, which hopefully will cover up for the losses we are making in other markets, as Jochen mentioned before. And for rest of world, we will be better due to the acquisition of Australia, because we didn't have Australia in last year. Overall, we, as you said, on the lower end of the guidance, we are planning more or less the same EBITDA as we did last year on Q4. So we assume that this assumption is in line with our expectation as a minimum achievable number.
Okay. And just as a follow-up, in looking into next year, obviously with the slowdown of investment in equity stores, does that mean it leaves you pretty uncomfortable where with consensus expectations for 2019? Because obviously, whilst it saves on CapEx, it could have quite a material implications for how sales and EBITDA actually evolve.
Stuart, we are in the course of defining the budgets in the next days together with our supervisory board. I think your question is more than understandable and fair, but please give us a little bit more time to really finalize our budgets, and then we would go out to the markets as soon as possible with the new guidance. I think the message here is that, first of all, we have learned to balance stronger our equity, since we might have risks, as we just learned now from, let's say, Denmark and Scotland, might have risks in our ramp-up, which affect our EBITDA. Focus is to become more profitable as soon as possible. Having said that, if we shift stronger into a franchise model, it will help our balance sheet. It will help our CapEx, of course, by 40% decrease. On the other hand, as you know, franchise is very profitable for the company, meaning you don't have any opening costs. You make EBITDA right away, since we get then our percentage on the turnovers. So that should have positive impacts in terms of our cash situation, our cash flow, and also on our EBITDA.
And just to follow up on that, though, is this a decision that's based on the fact that you are now capital constrained rather than actually strategically would be the best idea for the business?
Generally, Stuart, as you know, when we started our discussions, we always wanted to be more balanced. Yeah, and the balance was around 60-40%. When we started to roll out more intensively, as we all know, the franchise partners need a little bit more time to find the locations. We still used the momentum to open restaurants, but we had a strong overlap, I would call it, into the own equity. And if you look on the ratio last year, it was a very strong ratio towards own equity. And we always wanted to get in a more balanced situation. And the openings that we are having next year with our franchise partners are not openings that are decided now. These are openings that were in the pipeline also for a longer period. Now we're coming to a more balanced situation. And of course, given the situation that we have to look on every single opening very, very, very detailed going forward, if there are opportunities where you have an opening that might, maybe doesn't have enough, let's say, a lot of water under the roof, then there might also be the opportunity to discuss if a franchise partner in a location that's maybe not one of the biggest or the major locations or capitals of countries where it might make sense also to a franchise partner to be more profitable faster. But the general split, the general overall split was a split that we also in our three-year period wanted to balance better but couldn't from the first sort of rollout in 17 and 18.
I think from the CFO perspective, I also would like to add, Stuart, that we have clearly discussed the management, the cash flow situation. I think we agreed that we should bring operating cash flow much stronger close to the CapEx. We have not been able to, we have been very negative free cash flow based this year. And I think our clear target for next year is to close the gap even further and maybe even to close it completely. That's something where we are working on, and that's a clear cash flow perspective for the business. And this is also, of course, a reason on the de-risking in regards to the own equity investment.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Nicolas Mauder, Kepler Cheuvreux. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. A couple of questions from me as well. All of them sort of relate to the planning of your net financial debt situation, which I think is the most important discussion to be had right now in your current situation. So first, can you potentially give an indication where you see your net financial debt at the end of Q4 as a basis for 2019 planning? We know what, how many restaurants you still want to open. We sort of know what your EBITDA in Q4 is going to be. So what's the stable basis for 2019? And beyond that, you already said that CapEx is going to be 40% lower in a 50-50% split between equity and franchise. Can you already give us an idea about the absolute amount of openings in 19 or even 20 and whether a 40% lower CapEx in 2019 implies a CapEx slightly below 50 million. Thank you.
Okay, so in regards to the net debt development, due to the sales expectation we now have for Q4, we will see a slight increase in net debt going forward also for the Q4. You know that it is our strongest cash quarter, but nevertheless net debt will slightly increase. In regards to the next year, I think I've made clear my comment, Nicolas, that I would like to close the gap on operating and free cash and CapEx cash flow, and therefore the number you have mentioned of 50 million is even too high. We expect a lower number than that. Currently, we have in mind a number around 40 million.
Okay, and thank you for that. That's very surprisingly open. And on finally, on the absolute amount of openings, I remember from the sort of IPO marketing process that we were once talking about 35 to 40 openings. Given the fact that there's been some shift in the expectations, what do you think about this now, maybe based on the 35 to 40 that we once had?
Mr. Mauder, Nicholas, we're not in the we don't have the opportunity to give you now a very detailed guidance already for the next year, yeah, in terms of number of openings. Meaning what we can give you now very clearly is that we have a much, much better balance between own equity and franchise, as Lutz just mentioned. And I think we will open from today's perspective. And as you remember, we have been very transparent on our pipeline. There will be a good number of openings going forward in the next year, but with a different balance. And the detailed guideline or the detailed guidance, but also with a guideline on where to open when, we will, like always, announce when we go for the guidance early next year. And then we can also give you a very clear picture where, in what countries we open with what sort of model.
Okay, thank you very much. These are all my questions.
The next question is from Christian Bruns, Equinet Bank. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, Christian Bruns from Equinet. I have a question on your like-for-like performance, on your calculation. As I see it on page 5, you had in Q3 a negative like-for-like for the group of minus 1.9%, and you had in the first half, you had minus 0.8%, but for the nine-month period, you say that you have a minus 0.3%, and this, I think, it does not really fit together. Or could you elaborate about which restaurants did you include in this calculation? And the second question is on your ramp-up enhancement program. Could you give me a little bit better feeling what was the problems with recent ramp-ups? Was it more wrong locations, or is it the processes which did not run efficiently, or it's the wrong marketing to get the people into the restaurants? What is the main factor in your view, and what do you want to improve in the next couple of openings?
Okay. Regarding to the cohort questions, we're using different cohort on quarterly basis, therefore you cannot really add up that number. And what we are doing is if the new restaurants are coming into 12 months maturity, they are added up into that cohort and then they are summed up. So therefore, I think it's not mathematically possible to compare that two numbers. Of course, I'm happy to discuss it with you in detail, I think, in a side discussion how we are doing that and also giving you some details on the stores we now have included. But in general, we can assume that some French stores are now included. Yeah?
Okay.
Good. And in regards to the second question, I would hand over to you.
Yeah, Christian, to your question on the learnings, especially now from a couple of our openings, generally there's one very big learning is we entered two new markets with Denmark and Scotland. And what we realized is, first of all, it's not a location. It's not a location issue to point it out. We are in Copenhagen and Tivoli in a very nice location. We are suffering from visibility in Tivoli that we definitely have to say because it's a design object that had in the end a little bit of different sort of window display than expected when signing 4 years ago. But the general learning here is that the brand is, let's say, for tourists and travelers to Hamburg well known, but for the, let's say, urban society that we address, the brand is new. So we learned a lot that when we enter new markets, we have to really communicate much more intense and much more appropriate and also customized to the markets how and what we are standing for. And the Danish market, for instance, is a very, let's say, young, fashionable, trendy market, so the communication in that sense has to be also to a certain extent adapted. At the same time, we have to, but this is not a special issue for Copenhagen, we have to train much in more intensive the staff that, you know, every first impression is really a perfect impression. And it's similar in a market like UK, where, of course, Vapiano is sort of a established brand in London, even with having not too many locations. But Scotland, on one hand, is a different market, and it's a market where guests and customers are getting more slowly used to new brands coming into market. So it's really somehow similar to the Danish learning. We had to or have to
broaden the expectation of those societies much more intensively by communication and give them a clear picture where we stand for. And this has to be customized to the environment. These are the major learnings. We felt very comfortable with the operational excellency in the Glasgow restaurant, but it's all about really the communication. And the DNA, as you know, is sort of our open kitchen. And in those locations, the core DNA of Vapiano, so even if you don't do communication in advance, is not right away visible. Yeah, we have, for instance, in Glasgow, signed also 4 years ago, as well as in Denmark, we have a small ground floor. And then the whole beauty of Vapiano is to be seen and identified on the first floor. Having said that, we also learned our lessons. And those locations were signed off, as I just said, a long period before the existing management here. We have decided in the executive board not to sign any location where we have small ground floors and then can tell our story on the first floor. So meaning ground floor, full visibility of what we're doing, plus better communication, and last but not least, location by location, maybe some more intense trainings for the people. These are the learnings out of that. Generally, the learnings are, as I just said, ground floor, first floor. The other learnings are the size of our locations. We're going to adapt them into a, let's say, more the, I'm not talking about minis, I'm talking about the more smaller range of the general sizes we have. And then, as I just said, with the marketing and training. And our new COO, Cornelius Ewerke, he's very experienced in that, and we take a lot of learnings from his experience that we also take in this ramp-up enhancement program for the new openings.
Okay, thank you very much. Could you allow me a further question, because I didn't get in your focus countries for your expansion. I think you mentioned Germany, Austria, and France. Was that correct for next year?
Exactly. That's exactly the pipeline for next year. I guess in the last course we already discussed a little bit the pipeline, and also on our roadshows we always give full visibility to the signed contracts. Having said that, next year the money goes to France, and out of the own equity, a proportional of almost 70% go to the French market. Then we have 4 openings in the German market, 1 in Austria, and maybe 1 opening in London, and the rest is purely franchise business. So no new market entries with risks.
Okay, thanks.
The next question is from Annabel Hagerhans of Berenberg. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi, 3 questions from me, please. Firstly, on page 13, you show the transaction growth figures year to date, but this includes a hypothetical guest count for takeaway. Can you give us these figures excluding the takeaway guest count assumption? Secondly, you've told us recently that you have no intention to delist, but can you confirm that none of your major shareholders are planning to take the company private? And finally, just a clarification on your previous comments regarding net debt. When you say you're going to see a slight increase in net debt in Q4, is that off the 180 million euro net debt at the end of the quarter or the 160 million euro following the capital increase? Thank you.
Okay, so last question first. It's excluding the capital increase, so it's on a like-for-like basis. Including the capital increase, of course, we will reduce our net debt. And then in regards to the question on the ticket, excluding takeaway, we just give us 1 minute. We are looking for the number.
Yes. First of all, we calculate, we have to, controlling has to look on it, we calculate 1 main dish as 1 guest in the takeaway business. So really comparable to the brick and mortars business. And that was, as I just said in the last call, pretty helpful in Q3 and also early Q2 that we implemented this takeaway because footfall decreased due to the environmental situation, but also due to the soccer stuff, et cetera, would have been in brick and mortars bigger. As you might have noted also from other restaurant groups here on the continent that have talked about their figures during July and August, so we could cover up. But we could not cover up everything that we missed on footfall. But generally, it's like 1 dish, 1 guest.
Good. In regards to your question for the delisting, I think you, I refer to our statement which we did last week. We have not heard any plan about any of that plans. Also, we have not heard from Barclays that they were not mandated on that task, so we cannot confirm that. In opposite, we have to clearly state that this is something which is just a rumor.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question is from Josef Beil of Beil GmbH. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hello, thanks for taking my questions. My first question is concerned with your assessment that the liquidity reaches for 2018 and 19. I just wonder how much of an improvement in cash flows that implies. And my second question is concerned with the same-store sales potential growth and how much there is inherent limitation due to the front cooking concept. And then in connection with that, if you can see any improvements there concerned with the terminals. Thank you.
Good. In regards to the liquidity position, as stated in the presentation, it's based on our current plans, so based on our EBITDA estimate for next year, including our also planned CapExes, which I've mentioned before. It also, of course, includes the capital increase, which we have just seen, and the undrawn line with our existing banks. So, therefore, this is the basic assumption, and we have been detailed calculating that, and, of course, we also discussed with our auditor, PwC, on that point.
Mr. Bain, in terms of your questions, the front cooking concept versus growth, as you know, we are testing or piloting a couple of restaurants in the meantime, around 10 restaurants, where we implemented sort of a front cooking versus the open kitchen logic. And those pilots are running with the open kitchen logic, where, as you can see, maybe in Checkpoint Charlie in Berlin or in Berlin One or also in Toulon or in Chicago, where you enter the restaurant, you don't get the in the Berlin One and Checkpoint Charlie version, you don't get the RFID card anymore. Then you order right away on terminals, or as we call them, in addition, human order points, or you order with the app, including the full menu of La Piano. These orders will be automatically transferred into an open kitchen environment where you see the Vapianisti cooking freshly and preparing your products. And then they will be cooked synchronized for a group at the same time to be picked up, or if you use the app, to get it delivered to the table. Well, so far, the tests are giving us a very positive direction. What do I mean by positive? First of all, we see in those restaurants an increase of the ticket per guest. And this increase of the ticket per guest is purely related to people ordering more on the app, sustainable around 10% more on the terminal per guest, but also more with the human order point, because there we have Vapianisti who are really, let's say, trained to sell or to offer products to our guests. At the same time, we see a significant speed or waiting time decrease. We measured in Berlin One, and in Berlin One, for instance, where we could really compare before versus after, we had an average waiting time in the lunch peak of 37 minutes. It's coming down now to average 17 minutes in Berlin One, which is a significant improvement of waiting time. Plus, at the same time, our guests get everything together as a group. So from a financial perspective, in terms of the value per guest, it seems to go in the right direction. From a experience perspective, it seems to go in the right direction because two pain points, synchronized cooking and waiting time, are improved significantly. From a atmosphere and DNA perspective, from the guest research we did so far, we didn't see a general, let's say, remark or negative sentiment that the guests say, I would like to have always the opportunity to get it customized in front of my eye. We are, because this is so key for the brand, we are really looking at this very cautious. And we do a market research ongoing right now in Europe again, where we can show the results to our SVP early next week.
on what are the key equity drivers for the brand. Management believes for the moment that we should work on efficiency, that we should work on the pain points for the guests, and at the same time focus on emotional tools that transport the brand DNA as a key equity part. And freshness will be anyhow always full out of doubt, so we produce our pasta in-house, et cetera, et cetera. So if you combine quantitative first results and qualitative results, we are very confident that we are here not on the wrong track. And a couple of the new openings we are planning for next year will enlarge the pilot base for the open kitchen logic and this sort of guest journey. On one hand, and on the other hand, we will get a better and bigger base to measure and not make any mistakes that might harm the brand. So if you ask me where do you stand now in your pilot from today's perspective, I would say we are at 80%, and we will watch it very closely in the next couple of months, and then I guess we will take a decision jointly with our supervisory board in what direction we will build our restaurants going forward. On the terminals, after testing different formats with direct payment, et cetera, we decided now to do the full payment terminal, meaning you pay, you order it, you pay right away at the terminal, which also decreases the number of friction points for our guests. And you can do that with your credit cards, your app, and where we still have an RFID card, also with the RFID card, and then pay when you check out. In the new restaurants that we open, the terminal will be part of the new restaurant openings. And in those restaurants, you can also then put the infrastructure appropriate to the terminals. In the existing restaurant, it's a little bit complicated if you don't have the open kitchen, because then the infrastructure of the cooking lines have to be somehow paralyzed with the takeaway cooking and the terminals. So is that answering your question, Mr. Bayer?
Yes, thank you.
We have a follow-up question from Christian Boons, Equinet Bank. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
On your new concept, and you are testing now these 10 open restaurants with full payment terminals and you also are testing mini Vapianos, and I think that's all. What is your preferred concept currently? Is it more likely that you roll out the full payment terminals restaurants with the open kitchen, or more smaller mini Vapianos? Where do you stand in the concept?
Yeah, Christian, that's a very good question.
And another question, sorry. The rollout of these full payment terminals, could you give us a little bit of feeling about the speed of this rollout?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me start with the second question. As I just said, for the new openings that we're planning, the terminal would be part of the restaurant concept as the takeaway and home delivery as well. For the existing one to replenish and bring the terminals in, we see partly infrastructural issues due to the logic and the setup of the kitchens, meaning we cannot and will not roll out them in the existing environment broadly because, as I just said, you have to get in alignment with the kitchen, the ordering logic, and then you have the queues for the guests who order in the classic way, then you have to close cooking stations. So that's a little bit complicated without irritating too much. And 2 years, so for the new ones, it will be part of the new ones. And they will have the payment logic, meaning you can pay right away the terminal, then you don't have the other friction to check out one more time. In terms of the open kitchen logic versus the mini, in the minis, we work with the open kitchen logic, and now we're testing this open kitchen logic and the guest journey as just described, Christian, also in a few of the big ones. The first one would be our restaurant in Berlin 1, where we implemented this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Having said that, are we doing more, let's say, big ones with a new logic, or are we doing more minis? We can't give you the full answer on that right now because we want to make sure that we don't make a mistake. Having said that, it's a very cautiously
measured qualitative and quantitatively process until management is really super confident that either or would be the right way. And then we will discuss it with our strategy committee in the supervisory board to finally come to a conclusion. We believe that in the course of the next year, we will have a picture on how we would go, and probably not at Q4. It's of course on our priority list in terms of evaluating, and there's a project team purely dedicated to drive that going forward. As I just said right now, from the, let's say, figure side, it's going in the right direction. From the feedback from the customers, both ways, the mini and the open kitchen logic in the big ones is going in the right direction. We are evaluating now the impact on the core DNA of La Piano to make sure that not in mid or long term we make a mistake. And then we will discuss appropriate with supervisory board on that. But I can tell you one more point to the minis. We also decided that we open 5 more minis as an opportunity for our franchise partners, because it was always a challenge from our partners that we give them the opportunity also to learn with minis. And we will announce that, for instance, in the German franchise meeting then by tomorrow for the first time. So the base for minis is getting broader.
Okay, thank you.
There are currently no further questions. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. We haven't received any further questions. I hand back to the speakers.
So, first of all, thank you for joining the call, sir. Thank you for your very good questions. I would like to one more time confirm that management is very much focused after the disappointing Q3 and the disappointing outlook for this year to really get back on track and deliver as soon as possible back on our general expectations. I think we see a slight improvement in Q4 on the like-for-like basis in important markets. The measurements are fully on track in our markets, and we focused with new projects to get back on profitability very fast. In combination with the balanced growth for next year, I think we can deliver going forward much better than we did so far in this year. Thank you for your trust. We would be very happy to later on or in the next days answer more detailed further questions that you might have to your investor base and, of course, to all of you. Thank you very much for joining. Have a good rest of the week and a good start in December, and we're looking forward to speak to you as soon as possible. Thank you very much.